to the Wealth Easy Podcast, your destination for insights on wealth, health, and real estate. I'm your host, John Durbano. I went from former financial advisor for a big bank to now educating people on how to plug your financial leaks and create your rich life without using the stock market. Before we dive in, please hit that subscribe button and share it with others. By subscribing, you're helping the show grow using the algorithm and allows us to get even more successful guests on the show. Now let's begin creating your rich life. Welcome back to the Wealth Easy Show, where we talk all things wealth, health, and real estate. Today, folks, we are going to be talking infinite banking concept. And my guest today is a speaker, a serial entrepreneur, and an IBC practitioner. He and his brother, Jonah, known as the Banking Bros, they host a podcast called The Cash Compound, where they seek to teach people how to save and spend money at the same time. Please welcome to the show, Jeremiah Dew. Welcome, buddy.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you having me. And I'm so glad to be able to talk to you on Wealth Easy. I love it.
Amazing. Thanks. Yeah, we met each other in Denver last year. I heard you speak. I loved your content, and I love what you teach people about the infinite banking concept, because it's a real trigger now. A lot of people are asking me, what is the best way to set up infinite banking? It's a word that is quite often used now through a lot of social media. And I think it's really starting to catch on. And I know you and your brother are really big on talking about infinite banking concepts. So why don't you give my listeners a 2-minute bio on yourself?
Yeah, man. So appreciate it. We started doing this infinite banking thing about 9 years ago, just last month in March. It's now April 24 as we record. Prior to that, John, I was not a finance bro. Man, I didn't know what was happening. And the only education I had in any type of financial space was what Dave Ramsey told me to think. And so prior to that, it was marketing, promotion, video production, entertainment, and speaking, as you mentioned. So I didn't take a business class in college or anything like that. So for the last several years now, the Cash Compound has been helping people with code cracking cash flow. That's our mantra and motto. And we teach people the infinite banking concept. We're a boutique shop in South Carolina, where we help people understand how to save and spend money at the same time, like you mentioned. We do it together, and we have several agents on our team who are making that mission happen for the masses all across the U.S. So that is who we are and what we're doing. But prior to understanding this concept, I didn't know real estate, man. I didn't talk business with my folks. And the only thing we said about money wasn't taboo. The only thing we said, though, was, oh, we can't afford that. So that's all we ever had a conversation about, my friend. And we took some of our production skills and speaking skills and really honed it into helping people understand what infinite banking is through social media and through production. And it got simplified for a lot of people with the way we do our visuals and the way we talk about it and help people. So it's been a wonderful journey so far. It's a lifelong mission for us to help people with cracking that code to cash flow. And we're so happy to share that with people in your world as well.
Yeah, and I appreciate you being here and doing that. So one thing you did mention, and I picked up on it, is that, you know, at the dinner table, talking about money was taboo. And I had Scott Donnelly on here a little while ago, and he did speak when we were together in Colorado. And I had him on the show, and the one thing that he is really trying to break and shift that experience is, it's okay, and you should be talking about money at the dinner table, especially with your kids, right? Because it's not being taught in school, and it's no longer taboo, and you guys are doing a really great job of teaching people about money. And I like what you're saying is how to save it and spend it at the same time, because this is what I preach and talk about also with my clients. What I want to know is, what inspired you to start teaching others about the infinite banking concept?
Yeah, we got into the game through a great practitioner of the concept and a great speaker. And so if anybody knows
Nelson
the name,
Nash?
Brent Kessler.
Oh, Brent Kessler.
So yeah. The Money Multiplier. My brother and I were around day one when that agency started. We helped name it. So we call ourselves the Cash Compound. And we on social media are the Banking Bros. So as you can see, we got this alliteration thing going. So I help name the Money Multiplier. See, I'm Baptist, so everything is alliterated or rhymes so you can remember what it is, right? So we've been around since that time. And what we realized helping him set the stage for people who had started and aftermarket. How do we deliver this concept to people in a way they understand it? And how do we help people, my brother specifically, help people use their infinite banking life insurance policy? Like, how do I use it? How do I pay off my debt with this? Or what type of real estate can I get into? Like, how do I get the money out? Like, do I have a debit card and get the money? Like, what is that? So we started to make educational content for the people that we were servicing first inside that agency. And over time, we ended up branding our own environment because we were making videos now and content and talking to people, and our general agency wasn't providing that particular style of content, education, and resources. So over time, it just became, we have to help people understand, even people who have these policies, use them well. They don't understand it. And so they're getting beat up when they go to Thanksgiving dinner and Christmas dinner to their families. They're getting beat up because they don't even know how to explain what they have and what they bought to other folks. So, you know, we're realizing that they needed the resources and support and coaching and mentorship. So that's kind of what we started to do over the course of about 2 to 3 years, 2017 through 2020. And when 2020 hit, some of the things that I was always participating in at large in my community, singing and dancing, throwing t-shirts, doing galas and sports entertainment for Clemson University, all the things that I had done traditionally, a bunch of them went away during the pandemic. So we got a little bit more focused and more serious to help people more full-time. And social media just helped us be able to take it to a full-time type level in mid-2020.
Yeah. I want you to demonstrate for the people that are listening. I strongly suggest you go into our YouTube and you actually watch this, because Jeremiah has a really unique way of illustrating how the infinite banking concept works. And I've seen your videos and I think it's amazing what you guys are doing. You break it down to the KISS simple. You keep it simple, stupid. And anybody can understand this, and it's very simple, but I love what you do. Can you please show my listeners how you illustrate how to use the infinite banking concept with three cups? Because I think this is very unique.
Let's get into it. Appreciate it, John. Thank you for that. The only reason you think it's great, man, is because you weren't here day one when I was getting beat up at Thanksgiving dinner trying to explain to my mom what this illustration was showing and all that stuff. So it did take a while to come up with this three cup setup visual concept. And what we're going to see right here is cup number 1, 2, and 3 and a little shot glass here of dividends. We'll get to that in 1 second. So a whole life insurance policy from a mutual company that we'd most often use for the concept of infinite banking is the product that we're displaying right here. We'll get to the process in a second, but if you understand the product, then the process becomes a lot easier. So the product right here goes like this. Ladies and gentlemen out there, if you get in money, we'll do it in the four I's. How about that? The four I's. Money that you make, John, you tell us. What is it that's coming in? That's the clue. It starts with an I. You work hard for it. Your grandma gave it to you for your birthday. What's that money called?
That's income.
Income. All right, ladies and gentlemen. If you think your income is important, and income is valuable because it buys you, ready for this, clothes and cars and comforts and cuisine and chocolate. I told you I was Baptist, so all C words right there, right? That's what income buys you. It's very valuable. You would agree?
Absolutely.
Okay, so we're going to place this in a valuable spot. And if we don't want to lose our valuables, we buy insurance, don't we?
Yes.
So, ladies and gentlemen, you can put your income into an environment of insurance. We already know that. I've let the cat out of the bag, and a whole life insurance is guaranteed to grow and cash flow. All right, we've just placed our dollars inside premium. That's cup one, the red one. And when you give an insurance company money, premium, it buys a policy. It buys peace of mind, a payout, a pool of cash. In life insurance, that's death benefit. All those P words are the policy. Death benefit is now guaranteed to come out. That's cup three, the blue cup. Because unfortunately, John, you and all your listeners out there, Wealth Easy family, you gonna die. You gonna die. Okay, so it's gonna come out one day guaranteed because it's whole life insurance that lasts your whole life. Would you agree, John?
Absolutely.
All right, you might die tomorrow. You might die when you're 120. It's going to pay out. Your friends, family, church, and charities will get death benefit income tax free in the U.S. Okay? It's coming out.
And in Canada.
And in Canada. It's okay, I wasn't sure because yep. I know your listeners got a lot of people above the border there. So if you want to know, we're down here with Uncle Joe. But if you're with Justin Trudeau,
yeah,
you know where to go. All right. Right? So I told you it all rhymes down here. Okay. So Uncle Joe, we got you in all 50 states and some territories. But if you're upstairs with Justin Trudeau, you go to John Durbano.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Yep. Okay. So cash value now, because the insurance company owes you all this money, it must pay out one day. You will die. There is a growing equity value toward that money. You bought this money. It's guaranteed. Your pennies bought their dollars. And cash value is simply a representation of how much equity you have so far in the total pool that you bought from them. Cash value, not to be confused with Dave Ramsey down here and what he says, is not a separate pool of money. It's the equity you have in the full pool. Cash value is the net now from the future gross. The death benefit is the future gross has to pay out. Cash value is how much you could call if you want to use, lose, and abuse the insurance company's money. That's how much you can get to, because it's their money. And contrary to popular opinion, if you decide to take it out and finance a car or a great real estate deal, your money that you placed in this policy contract premium is still there. And the premium dollars we give them is where all the guarantees come from. Guaranteed growth. Guaranteed not to go backward or down. It's not an investment. It's guaranteed to earn dividends from a mutual company on any time they declare them. So dividends are not guaranteed, but anytime they declare dividends, they share that pool of profit with the policy owners. They don't have any shareholders or stockholders. So that's what our little shot glass is for. So we are going to teach people how to save their money, like you mentioned, John, and spend someone else's. The insurance company's money. It's got your name on it. You can use it for whatever you like, but your money is going to stay safe and sound and still going compound. How about that?
And I just want to point out, too, is that you did say that the dividends are not guaranteed. However, no insurance company has ever failed to pay out a dividend in like over 200 years.
That's right. So the companies that we like the most down here that have been paying dividends for their mutual insurance participating policy owners. There's a lot of words in there, but they've just paid them every year on top of the guarantee. A lot of people say that because your money's earning a dividend. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Your money's earning a guarantee first. Big deal. Dividends are extra, but all the companies that we utilize down here, they've been paying dividends for at least 100 consecutive years. Nobody's missed. We're talking recession, depression, yo mama, Obama, World War I, II, January 6th, whatever they pay every time.
Yeah. And even during the Great Depression, when we talk, you know, from 1929 to 1934, you know, over 9,000 banks were shut down.
That's right. But JCPenney, right? We know JCPenney, the big retail magnate, he borrowed against his life insurance while the banks were failing.
Yes.
And I've heard the number like $3 million was able to be borrowed because there was still cash value. Insurance companies do not fail like that. They've got the cash on hand, and he was still able to finance his operation during the Depression. Yes.
Yes. Yes. He leveraged his cash value, and not one insurance company actually went under. And it was the insurance companies that actually helped bail out some of these banks. So if you're looking for something that is safe and secure, it's definitely not a bank. It is a life insurance company. And like you said, it is not an investment, but what a great place to store cash and receive a bond-like return.
There you go. That is exactly right. So that's why we store our cash there. Just like John said, I love the way that he puts it. And many people in this infinite banking large community say it well. Some people throw you off with it. Some people say, hey, let's use a different type of newfangled product to do it. You got to be careful of all that. However, we're talking about where you store your cash. So you have permission to spend on whatever you want to do. This isn't the investment. The investment is now going to happen outside of the policy because I got money.
No, that's such a really great illustration. In your experience, what's been the most counterintuitive aspect of IBC that goes against conventional financial wisdom?
It's that word investment. We're challenging the word investment, and most people, because of Wall Street or Bay Street, have automatically gone that direction in their mind when we're trying to say, no, before all of that, we need to store our cash in a place that's guaranteed, private, liquid, compounding, controlled by you. We are not comparing this to the investment. We're going to be able to do better with investments because we've placed our money here first. And that right there is the most counterintuitive thing for folks. And they will still come back 10 minutes after you explain them the cups or John's gone through his program, whatever. And they'll ask you a question about investment returns again. You're like, hold on, let's back up a second. I'm not saying don't do investments. I love investments. You better do investments. We need to get there, but we got to have some money first. And so here's the question we help people understand is, where are we pulling our money from to do stuff? Where is it coming from? If it's coming from Bank of America, RBC, TD, whatever, USAA, you know, if it's coming from there or under the bed or in the mattress, in a can, in the backyard, that's what we're talking about first. So if you can help start your mind there, we're going to get to where we need to go faster and you can get back to investment soon.
Yeah, absolutely. You brought up Dave Ramsey, and I want to go back to and touch on him because, you know, he does give good advice on debt. Like no one should carry debt, but there's good debt and there's bad debt. And I don't believe in the bad debt, which is consumerism. But let's talk about Dave Ramsey for a second, only because you brought him up and he's one of the most known speakers on investments where he gets a lot of stuff wrong. And especially when it comes to life insurance, why do you think it is that Dave Ramsey is telling people that whole life is a load of crap and that the cash value, that middle cup there, when you die, the insurance company is going to keep that and you don't get it? Why is he misleading people and promoting term and not the whole life aspect? Because we all know that 99% of term policies are not going to pay out. And his argument is, well, by the time you're at that age, you're self-insured. I don't believe in being self-insured because I believe, and I know for a fact, that the largest purchasers of whole life insurance are millionaires and billionaires. And it's not because they need the money. They're already rich.
Right, by far.
Yeah.
Yeah, they understand some of the tools with it. Well, there's a couple reasons for that. And one or two things. Let me agree with Dave for a second. Like you, of course, he's given great ideas around getting out of consumer debt. Like, that's terrible, right? And so go for it with that stuff for sure. Totally fine. I got out of consumer debts. It was really just college debt and educational debt. Personally, when I was listening to him and a big fan and follower, I saw him speak twice. I read five of his first five books. I read all of them. I had them. You know, he's probably up to 10 books now. Totally fine with that. A worldview, as a conservative person, a Christian person myself, like, I'm down with those things. They're totally fine. But you're exactly right. There comes a point where it's like he veers and goes off the deep end about insurance. I'll agree with him first. Ladies and gentlemen, your insurance products shouldn't be mixed in with your investments. I just tried to separate those things for you. That's my personal belief. But the insurance companies got into investment grade insurance, you might call it, in about 1980 when interest rates were crazy and they were having a hard time compete. The problem was they shouldn't have been playing that game at all. So many universal life products and properties and mindset philosophy is where Dave is coming from. And a lot of that universal stuff messed a lot of people up because agents and insurance companies got into conversations with people that people did not understand. And it really tainted what insurance is. And so with that, I got to agree with them. A lot of stuff when it comes to universal threw people off. And insurance companies, in a lot of ways, shouldn't even have played that game to start with. However, ladies and gentlemen, what Dave Ramsey is not talking about, if you dive into deep with what we're saying at the Cash Compound and what you understand about Nelson Nash's book and this concept of infinite banking, Dave Ramsey is not talking about banking. That's the word. The infinite banking concept actually is cored in the word banking, and banking is always happening, even in Dave Ramsey's scenario, but the banking function is not controlled by you. And what Nelson Nash tries to help people understand, what we try to help people understand in some of our videos, some of our online content, is that if banking is controlled by you, you're going to win on your investments. If banking is controlled by a third party, a finance company or Wells Fargo or the U.S. government in your life, the IRS, if banking is controlled by them, you're in trouble. Dave Ramsey is not arguing banking, and that is the difference. He's talking about investments. He's talking about life insurance, crazy enough. And we're going, banking can happen from life insurance, the right properly designed and proper types from proper companies. That's not what he's talking about. And so it took me a while, John, to understand the differentiators when I listened to Dave or watched Dave. I was like, man, I don't think I really believe Dave anymore. I was, oh, banking, that's the difference in separation. He's not talking about where's the banking function being controlled from. And I'll be honest with you, first 3 or 4 years of owning a policy, I wouldn't even understand what I just said. I wouldn't have. I would not have understand what I just said. What is banking? I thought banking was a place. Like, I thought I got a Visa card. Like, is that banking? Like, no, that's just, banking is still happening with whoever gave me the Visa card. Yeah, so banks make a lot of money, and they don't buy things. Banks have our money in them every Friday, every other Friday. They're dropping off our money, direct deposit, straight at the bank. The bank buys no cars. The bank buys no real estate. The bank is not paying back the loans with interest. We are, and the bank is making money. So that is banking. But the bank never bought anything. The bank didn't even use their money. So that's what we're talking about. We can utilize life insurance for that process. And John, I'll say it again. That's not what Dave's talking about. He's talking about investments. He's talking about return. He's talking about, well, you can get a higher rate of return. And they still, oh, the other thing you said is cash value. Yeah, a lot of people believe. And they bought into what Dave said. He's such a big personality, Susie Orman and many other people. Cash value is grossly misinterpreted what it is. Cash value is not a separate other pool of money they should also give you. I'll go back to that one word, and real estate people know this word. It's the equity you built in the policy. It is not a separate pool. They do not hand you both. They were not going to hand you both. They did not steal it when you died. It's how much of the big number you could have gotten to if you weren't dead yesterday. So at the end of your life, death benefit is there. Yesterday, equity was there. There you go.
Yeah. And, you know, Jason Lowe breaks this down. I had him on not that long ago, and I know we know Jason. He said, you know, the cash value is the future. It's the future payment of your death benefit. You're just getting a little bit more every single year, which you get to access. And
right.
I know in Canada, your cash value actually gets added on with your death benefit. And it's a total, when you look at the another column, it's a total death benefit. So if I was insured for $1 million, but yet I have $500,000 of cash value, I'm not getting paid $1 million. I'm getting the combined, right?
That is correct. Right. So that's another thing. If your face amount, so death benefit is like what you're going to get, but face amount is rises in the types of policies we build.
Yeah.
So the cash value is there because the original death benefit is rising. You're exactly right. Cash value is still the equity you have in the total, but it's rising the death benefit as well. So I failed to mention that 100%. If you look at these policies we're designing for people all across two countries, death benefit is going up, people. Face amount is going up. So where David Ramsey gets off on, yeah, you don't get it, it's like, well, why is the death benefit rising on the paperwork? I mean, we don't have to argue that. It's a guaranteed contract.
Yeah, I just think he's putting a lot of misinformation, and it's really unfortunate because he's got such a really big following, and people are buying into his misinformation, and it's truly unfortunate. You did bring up something about UL policies, and I think some of these policies did create a bad reputation in the market, because the way I look at a US UL policy is, you're buying a term policy with a slot machine attached to it.
There you go.
Right. Because you can lose in it. What I love about whole life insurance, and this is what I tell my clients, listen, you're not going to get grand slams with this, but I am going to get you to the Hall of Fame.
There you go.
Right. It's slow and steady.
You're exactly right.
It's boring. You know, I was doing a presentation with a client last night, and I said, how do you feel about guarantees? Do you like guarantees? She's like, yeah, I love guarantees. And I said, do you like volatility? Not so much. I said, do you like to lose money? She says, no. I said, if I can give you what you want to happen, if I can promise what you want to happen will happen, is that a plan that you'd like to move forward with? She says, absolutely. So I went through and I showed her a whole illustration using whole life and overfunding it. And I said, listen, this is not exciting stuff. It's really boring. It's slow and steady, but you're not going to lose. And I showed her how in the end she's going to be able to leverage her life insurance policy and get a guaranteed income for the rest of her life and have so many benefits in the use of it, like you showed with your cups there. During the life of this policy, you get to access the cash value by way of policy loans. You're not even using your money. You're using the insurance money. And that's where you say you get to spend and save it at the same time, because when you do a policy loan, you're not using your money. You're using the insurance company's money. And that's the power inside these policies. Yeah.
It's such a big deal and such a paradigm shift for people, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because they don't think about utilizing insurance as a product for prosperity. And that's for several reasons. And mostly because we pay insurance because we don't want to lose, not have guarantees. We want to pay as little as we can for the face amount or coverage, depending on what it is that we're buying insurance for. People just don't get it. So you're right, John. I love that. And recently my brothers challenged me on the same thing. If I could describe to you a great type of vehicle for your money, like you just did with your recent client, they're going to say yes to all of these questions you ask them. And then you're going to tell them, well, the product is whole life insurance. They're going, wait, what?
Yeah.
Like you just described, if I ask you if you want safety, if you want liquidity, if you want growth, if you don't want to lose, if you don't want taxes, blah, 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 and you agree with me on all that stuff, all right, I can boil 9 times out of 10. I can boil all of those features I may have just asked you about to one product. And when I tell you the product, you're going to question me, even though we just said it's all there and it's going to be on paper.
Absolutely. And the reason why people are so shocked when they hear it's life insurance is because the banks aren't promoting it. The government doesn't promote it because they don't make a penny off of it. But the banks right. own a shitload of it, don't they?
A bunch, yeah. So your bank owns more than that. In this country, your bank owns my bank, your bank, the ones you've got your money sitting in now that don't buy anything, but they collect, and they also don't use their money because you're the depositor and they just loan out, fractionalize your money like crazy. They own more whole life insurance than any other product, more than their real estate, more than their buildings. Tons of it. I mean, bajillions of it. You can look at that.
$200 billion.
.com or something. Yeah, the crazy
numbers. $200 billion in the U.S.
Yeah. You know, John, I have a story of a recent, there's a real estate guy in our community, Keller Williams, who I've been recently connected with for these types of conversations. And I'm breaking things down for him, helping him understand. And he had gotten a policy with another person in our space. He got another policy, but we knew each other, didn't realize I was dealing in this type of work. We go to sit down at the restaurant, and I'm explaining to him one or two extra features, making sure he understood and asking him about his policy. And he said, bro, I mean, you ain't got to even tell me half of this stuff. I was on the board of a bank. And so I saw how much we as a board owned specifically or controlled or operated or oversaw. And I know, I had no idea that that's why they owned it, or we had bought it, or we had signed off on the paper. He was like, man, I can't believe it. It was sitting in front of me this whole time. So yeah, we have a lot more conversations now about more life insurance for him and more banking policies. But he was like, I saw it at the bank. Like I could see the numbers.
Yeah, absolutely, and a lot of it. How do our beliefs, fears, and our habits around money shape our financial decisions and outcomes? Because there's a lot of fear out there. There's a ton of fear.
Yeah, we've all gotten bit is the thing. We've all taken risks that were unnecessary, but in our world, based on our information, they probably were necessary. We knew we had to do better. And so we took risks and we were way uninformed. And so we've lost money. Nobody can get through life without losing money. So we have to go for it. But that creates a fear of the unknown. Man, I don't know. You know, the older we get, the less risk we want to take for obvious and several reasons. However, so many people out there are unwilling to keep learning because they have a fear of losing. And what we're able to help them with in this space, one of the reasons I love it so much, is because we'll never lose anything. And now we have permission to go be adventurous in whatever ideas we want to grow. But I've even been caught up in, John, it's interesting. Recently, I realized that, you know, I've even been caught up when I was saving and in the Dave Ramsey method in the first several years of my policy, like I have to keep this cash value sitting here because I'm afraid to lose it. and I don't know what I should invest in, and I'm afraid that it might go away, and failing to remember that my compounded growth was still going to take place. My dividends were still most likely coming next year and all that. So I haven't even been at it for a long enough years to really put my money to work for me because of fears, because I had previously lost money. So even when I've got this permission to spend type of account of cash value, man, I think the mindset is foundational, man, just like you're saying. It messes a lot of people up, keeps a lot of people in the dark. It doesn't allow them. I mean, it's like a third party. Like your mindset, you think it's a third party and it's keeping you from prospering because you're not even willing to learn, you know, and you don't think it's a bad thing. You think it's that primal protection. You know, I got to make sure people don't sell me anything. I like to buy things, but I don't like to be sold, you know.
You know, I heard Garrett Gunderson, he said, you know, are you playing to win? Or are you playing not to lose? I think the people that are playing to win, they're not even investing in, they're not investing. They're speculating.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. That was me during the Dave Ramsey days, because I realized once I was out of debt and I had cash, right? So I didn't have a policy, none of this, but I'd work hard. I'd had a pile of cash. And every time I spent it, I went back to zero.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I mean, I'm still just as broke, I feel, because the line of continuity was zero. If it was, I was in debt, I was trying to get to zero, no debt. And if I was making money and spending all of it on an idea and it didn't work out well, or it was just consumerism, I'd just go back to zero. Like I was still operating at zero. And so that messed me up for many, many years. It took a toll on my family and the relationship with my wife because I was afraid to spend it. And I didn't, yeah, you're exactly right. I was playing not to lose anymore, but I wasn't playing to win, didn't know how to get into investments, didn't know what type I liked, didn't understand my, what you might call investor DNA. Yeah. And now I'm very aware more than ever, and every day it's getting better, that I love to save my money in this environment that we're talking about. And I like to get into investments that are actually passive to me. My biggest investment is actually my time in my business. My second biggest monetary investment is passive dollars in things like hard money, private money, and real estate. Because I don't want to be over there swinging hammers or dealing with tenants. So it took me a while to get there. And I'm happy that I'm here now. And so many people who are around me and around you and listen, they're just coming to their awakening. It's, you know, don't think that I'm ahead of you. Just think that found people find people. And once you get in the right space for your economy, your personal economy, you'll be able to soar. And you'll just, you know, leverage and go to big, great heights way sooner than you ever would have thought possible. So it's okay. It's okay, everybody.
I want to touch on something because you said it, investor DNA. And for those who don't know what investor DNA is, investor DNA is what you know best. And that is what you invest in. Don't invest in something that you don't understand. Warren Buffett's got a rule. He says, I don't invest in anything that I don't understand. So if you don't understand stock markets, don't invest in it. If you are in business for yourself and that is what you know, there's no better investment, I think, than investing back into yourself and into your business. Like you said, you invest in your business because that's your DNA. You know that the best, and you know you're going to get the best return out of your business. And with those other dollars, then you can start looking at other things like, you know, real estate. I know real estate. I'm always looking for passive investments. I want to be able to have assets that pay me cash flow. I want to, you know, earn money while I'm sleeping. You're not earning money while it's in the stock market. You know, very, very few people earn money in the stock market. How can the infinite banking concept and becoming your own banker help people free them from these limiting money narratives?
One thing that it helps you understand, even at a very simple concept first, is getting yourself out of consumerism, because you do need to build a bank. A bank is a business, and it's going to take some savings. It's going to take some diligence, some effort, some control of your capital. Now, if you are potentially spending like crazy, and we talk to many of those people because you use the internet, TikTok, I use the internet, TikTok, you're going to be in trouble. If you can't stop spending 99 or 101% of your money, you're not going to be able to start your banking system. So that's one thing, is it's going to force you actually to save some money. I've got a high school friend who caught on to what we're doing, and we're in town and we're buddies. And at the beginning, prior to his investment journey of utilizing cash value for opportunities, he was like, well, at minimum, it's making me save money. And I wasn't doing that before. So that's one thing right there. Now, John and I, you know, we're doing so much beyond that. I'm doing so much beyond that now. But at first, I mean, I talk to people all the time. It's like, hey, man, let's do some premium here. Let's do $25 a month, $25 a week. And I'm like, bro, I need you to take another conscious look of what's going on in your life. Is that because that's all you got, that, you know, or you're spending all your money? Like, if you put $25 a month in this type of tool, are we taking your gas money or something? Do you know what I'm saying? Because, like, if you, that's all you got, like, you probably should just spend it on gas and drive to a better job or something. You know? So that's one thing. But it helps people understand what Nelson Nash talks about, and it's taken me years to understand this and comprehend it fully, is how much interest is leaving your house, how much money is leaving your family, and it does not come back. You'd have to go back to work harder, work smarter, or something to get money to come back in, because the money that you keep is very important. Robert Kiyosaki, it's not just about how much you make, it's how much you can keep. And now we've got a system and tool for that that makes sense, that we're trying to break down for people. So the infinite banking concept can qualify you and your family in the areas of stewardship. Like you said, around the dinner table, qualifies you and your family around the areas of influence of money mindset and prosperity mindset. We've got money. Charity, we can deploy this money for opportunities. Emergencies are now accounted for in a liquid, controllable environment. The infinite banking concept does so much of that. And so many people, because of the internet, and I use TikTok too, and we're trying to maybe bait people into at least giving us a look, they go straight to this idea of return, straight to investment. There are so many more things that it does. Put you on the same page as your family. It promotes a legacy, of course. One day I'm going to die. I'm Baptist. I told you so. A home-going service, right? Home-going service. But there's going to be no fish fries, no GoFundMes in my family, because there's money coming out, right? After they put me in the ground or whatever they do, burn me up, whatever they're going to do. I got to talk to them about that. But anyway, after they do that, they're going to go to lunch afterward, and the check is on the way. The check is in the mail, right? They're going to get cash that they can, you know, continue the family legacy and all of my projects and inherit all of my stuff, because we had life insurance there for. So infinite banking does an infinite amount of things for you and yours.
Yeah. Generational wealth.
There you go. Love it.
Do you know Matt Cipolla?
I don't.
Matt Cipolla, Money Smart Guy.
I know of that.
I had Matt on a couple of weeks ago, and he said all his policies when he dies is going to go into a trust. And my family, if you want to access the money out of that trust, you need to have a picture of me and your mother next to your bedside.
There you go. Right.
To remind you of where this money came from. Right.
Isn't that a beautiful thing? You know, we're leaving our family something more than money. We're leaving them the legacy, right? It doesn't cost anything to put a picture of mom and dad on the mantle or next to the bedside table, but it's a reminder of what we do as a group and not how we're independent of each other, not how we're dependent of each other, but how we are interdependent of each other. Because of what I do, it'll make your life better. And because of what you do, it'll make my life better. And we have a responsibility now to each other, and everybody's life gets better by rising the tide across the board. Life insurance is doing that. Crazy, huh?
Well, look at the Rockefellers. There's a reason why the Rockefellers are billionaires and they still have all this generational wealth to today, and the Vanderbilts are broke. It's because, you know, the Vanderbilts, they passed on the money. It only lasted about four generations, and they squandered it and it was gone. Where John D. Rockefeller, he created this trust, and if you're going to be a beneficiary of this trust, we're going to buy a life insurance policy on you. Whatever money comes out of the trust, it gets replenished on death. And it's you know, Garrett talks about this all the time. It's the Rockefeller method.
There you go. I love it. Yeah, and the Rockefellers in their seventh to ninth generation at this point, and the money is still being stewarded across those generations. And the Vanderbilts lost their fortune. Third level Vanderbilt, very close to where I live in South Carolina, built Biltmore, the largest private home in America, right? And so U.S. And so they lost the ability to have that self-sufficient place. You know, people were building castles and stuff at that time, and they had all of the economy with it. Nobody has that anymore. We all go to the grocery store. But back then, you know, you're growing your own stuff, and you got your farmers and your shepherds or whatever they got going on. You're right. It was all contained. Nobody really does that much anymore. However, that was third generation. So third generation grandson loses the ability to have that as a private home institution after he dies. Fourth generation can't keep it. So it turns into the tourism experience that it is now, which is great. Love it, right? And you think about all that wealth. But now, of course, the family that operates it, it's still private. So they're making a lot of money, but it's not a private home anymore. That is a business now, right? So they make $15 million a year or something running that winery and the bed and breakfast and all that stuff. Awesome. Great experience. But you think about what type of wealth. They say that that would have cost now, today's dollars, about $2 billion plus to build. That's how much money they had back in 1895 compared to the population. People didn't have bathrooms, of course, in their house. No electricity. They got all that stuff going on in this grand place. But they were not providing anymore. They were not providing or changing with the times value to the economy. So they lost it. It's gone. And of course, there can be unfortunate circumstances like death, world wars, and things like that that play into that. So we'll give them that. Totally fine. I'm sure God loved these people, but they lost their wealth. They lost it. And it moved on to something that they could not completely sustain anymore without having to have outside help. So they provide something for the family now. Through the business, but you're right. It's gone. So we got Anderson Cooper now, and he's back in business doing his thing. You know, he's part of the family. I don't know if it's fifth generation, sixth generation at this point, but it's all separated, you know, doesn't have that family structure anymore.
Well, his mother, Gloria, really didn't have any money to leave him. She was pretty much broke too. So the money that Anderson has is the money that he actually made himself
right
from CNN. Yeah. And, you know.
Yeah, it's not family money anymore,
no,
right?
It's not
generational money.
Money.
No. He's good in his own right, doing his own thing. Yeah.
Yeah. You touched on, you know, talking to some people about, you know, them spending all of their money and, you know, being able to say, hey, listen, I'll start a policy. I'll put $25 in. You talked about monikers. I've got a moniker too. It's live 50, 30, 20.
Yeah.
It's 50% of your income goes to your needs. 30% is to your wants. And 20% is savings and investments. And you do that right off the top. You got to learn to live on 80% of your money. If you can save the 20% and learn to live on 80, you will 100% be a financial success. There's no doubt about it.
I love it. And what's interesting about that, John, is we're not talking about the dollar amounts. We're talking about the principles and the percentages. You don't have to be making 10 times what your friends and family make to pull off what you just said. You need to be a good steward and have a money mindset to put it in the right places and do the right things with it. And a lot of that just comes from your DNA. You don't have to be like me. You don't have to be exactly like you. You can invest in what you think is important. You can invest in the people you think and the projects you think are great. It doesn't have to be the same thing as mine. But if you're not properly thinking about it and putting it in tools that allow you access to use it and grow and things like that, you're just not going to win. So what we're helping people think through is both of those angles, ladies and gentlemen, not just the tool. I want you to get into the game of infinite banking and becoming your own banker. I do. I think it's for way more people than are doing it today, but you got to get the mindset right too. And we want to help you think through that.
And that's a really good point, because a lot of people listening right now, they're thinking, well, man, I can't save 20%. That's too much money. But it's not putting you on a budget. You have to get away from budgeting and get into managing. You have to learn how to manage your money. And the way you manage your money is plugging those financial leaks. If you can plug your financial leaks, and I'm talking about how you pay for things, if you've got credit card debt, you know, you talked about getting out of debt. That's 19-20%.
Right.
If you could pay off these credit cards, that's a 20% return. But if you can't save $10 a week, the belief system is I'll start saving when I make more money. The problem with that is you get lifestyle creep. And as your income goes up, so does the lifestyle. So if you can't save 10 bucks now, you're not going to save 100 or 200 bucks a week when the income goes up because the lifestyle is going to go up. So you've got to, and it's exactly what you said. It's not in a dollar amount, it's a percentage. Learn to live on 80%. And right off the top, if you can put 20% away and put into a separate account and then do things with it. And then once you get a good savings going, then you can start making these premium payments into the life insurance. And guess what? You still have access to this money. It hasn't gone anywhere. You get to access it throughout your lifetime. Plus, you get so many amazing benefits. You've got living benefits with it and all the tax provisions in it. It's the reason why millionaires and billionaires are buying the largest policies. It's because of these tax provisions and the benefits of the policy. It's huge.
I love it. You're exactly right. And folks have folks who get that in their bloodstream, in their system, are going to completely change their life because of their habits, their mindset, and then their habits. Get into the habit of getting toward those. And you don't have to start with, you know, those percentages. Work your way to those percentages. It becomes easier over time. And you got to get rid of some subscriptions out there, right? You're paying more for all of your subscriptions online at night than you were for paying for cable back in the day. So you can get there. It'll take some time, maybe for some people. But some of it is just, you know, tricks of the trade. Trick yourself into doing auto drafts. You know, get your premiums paid in auto drafts. Get your bills paid in auto drafts. There's a lot of people out there doing a lot of things manual. They're not utilizing the tools well. So if you can get there, I mean, several of my insurance policy premiums are auto draft. So if it's not there or it leaves automatically and shows up here, I don't have to worry about effort. I don't have to use my effort. Effort will go away. Effort will wane. I'll get tired. But if auto is a part of the system, then we'll get to where we want to go.
That's a really great point. My next question to you is, what role do you think financial education in our schools would play to better equip our future generations?
Well, I think that there's a big problem in formal traditional education right now, and almost nobody disagrees with me. Nobody's going to disagree with that. However, I do think that many schools and school programs are now realizing it and trying to pivot. Because of the internet, they are able to do that. They can teach things even in a traditional school setting from an online source or utilize some sort of program or mentorship or something from an online entity. But I am not putting my future and my family's legacy in the hands of Uncle Joe or Justin Trudeau. Like, I'm just not going to do it. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to. I saw something recently on the IG or the TT, where I saw something recently, you know, one of those audios that's getting reposted on everything. Like, I'm just not going to send my kids, strong words, but I'm not going to send my kids, my next generation, my legacy. I'm not going to send them to be trained by the enemy and then expect them to win the battles for our team, for our side. So I do not, in my family, we send our kids in private education. And there's some challenges there even, but it's just not the state, the empire. We've all seen Star Wars. They're just never the good guys, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean,
let's look who started the education system. It was John D. Rockefeller.
Right. John D. Rockefeller was trying to get people to work for his factories and Carnegie Steel and all that.
Yeah. And he didn't want thinkers.
He had the antitrust. The antitrust, and they broke up all of his companies, started donating to all of the higher ed, right? Yes. And then got into the pharmaceutical game through that influence. And sure, I might be a conspiracy theorist. John probably is too. But ladies and gentlemen, we got to pay attention. What is the backbone of a civilization is built on family. It's not built on the government. It's built on family. It's built on personal economy. It's built on trading and contracting with people. You know, go be a good neighbor out there. So that's what we're trying to do. And so in that regard, I cannot answer the questions for the Department of Education of the United States of America. I don't know, man, but I can't trust it fully myself. No.
And like you, my son goes to private school. I went to public school. I'm not saying the public school system is bad. I went to public school and I came out pretty good. However, I think over the last 40 years, the public system is dumbing down your kids.
Oh, my goodness. So I speak at a lot of schools, John, because I have a Black History Show experience. You've seen me do a little Martin Luther King out there and in the keynote where we met. And I travel to schools all across this country and talk about the civil rights movement and have a program around that. And I'm telling you, man, just in my hour to 2 hours or a couple of shows, my lectures, my lunch and learns that I do, I agree with you 100%. It is a problem. Learning is not happening. These are factories for movement and busyness and socialism. Education is not what's happening at so many schools. And I'm not just talking about public institutions. Both you and I have chosen private institutions for our children. And after going to public school, I didn't graduate. I ended up graduating from private school, but I went to public school most of the time as well. And I agree with you. It ain't the same game. I've been in these schools, in the hallways, this year. I'm talking about all over the country. And John, it ain't the same game. There is not a lot of learning going on.
No.
At least not for critical thinking. It might be learning how to get by and skirt by and learning how to get stuff done and passed without learning. But critical thinking, that is not what's happening. At all.
Yeah. And you know what? And a huge shout out to Scott Donnell for creating Gravy Stack, because he is really out there educating families and children about how to use money, because he sees it in the schools. It's just they're not teaching it. And, you know, I think the schools right now are they're just trying to create workers, and they don't want thinkers.
No. And of course, teachers and principals and stuff, I think they should have more autonomy, just like families. They should have more autonomy to be able to do certain things. Not teach to the test. There's so many things. And so I love Scott. Met him at that same event where we were together in Colorado.
Yeah.
Saw his episode with you, and it is brilliant what he's doing. It's fun. My daughter has it, you know, on the phone, and we can monitor it. And I got the parent version of hers, and we give her the gigs. I mean, it's the coolest thing. We got to get into it more for sure. She's just the oldest. So we've tested it out and tried to figure it out with her. So, it's just the beginning. What he's doing is so powerful, and it's fun, ladies and gentlemen. It's teaching the right things, and it's helping the parent know what those right things are. John, I grew up in a family, maybe like you, man. We didn't have the conversation. So I don't know, how do I teach my kid French if I don't know French? So I'm now able to go alongside of a private, customizable environment in something like Gravy Stack to be able to teach it to my kids, or like the policies. My kids come into the studio. And we interview people. They're not great interviewers. I'm working on it. But we have done shorts and TikTok reels and stuff like that so far. And they're learning it. They're just like, it's an automatic thing to think, hey, I got a bank. Dad pays me for working. And we can take money and we can go buy stuff. Like, you know, even at the level of being 7 or 4 years old, two of my boys are figuring that stuff out. So that's what you want. So
yeah, that's great. If you could go back to your younger self, what's the one piece of advice that you would give yourself around money?
Well, I might have to narrow down to one thing first. I'm going to be funny here for a second. One word, if I had to go back, it might be Bitcoin. I mean, honestly, I might just say Bitcoin, like whisper in my ear, like at 20 years old, hey, Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Like I might say that, but really it's understanding the rules of money. The rules and tools of money. And I did not know what any of it was until people started to pour into me around 12 years ago, more strategically about entrepreneurship and then about infinite banking. I didn't know them. And I really thought it was a world of haves and have nots. I thought it was like that. And I wanted to be a have so bad, I was able to discover that that wasn't true. So once I wanted to be a have so bad, I was like, maybe I can trick the system. Then I learned, oh, it's not haves and have nots at all. It's no and no not. It's do and don't do. And once I realized that, oh, it's tool and not using the tool right. I was like, oh, well, if it's a learnable trait, I'm in. I'm willing to learn. So I would have started that earlier and sooner, but it really was my upbringing, my background, my family. I just didn't know. So I would have had to whisper something like Bitcoin into my ear at 18 because I didn't know what I was supposed to be doing. So I was just trying hard.
Now, how about for our listeners? What's the one financial lesson that you wish everyone could learn early on?
It's very interesting that I get asked this question. I go on live on TikTok at the Banking Bros channel for anybody who wants to get on there and see our stuff. And a lot of times when people say, hey, you know, this is my retirement nest egg. This is my pool of money. This is how much money I make. What should I do? And it's very interesting now that I'm so often in a short form environment like social media say, oh, that's great, whatever the number is, wherever they got it. My suggestion is keep it. Keep it. See, of course, I'm helping people understand where to keep it. And they're like, what do you mean keep it? But what should I do with it? Well, before you do something, you should keep it. You should pay yourself first. You should put it in an environment where it's not going to leave first. Now that you got it, congratulations. Hold on to it for a second. Keep it. So that's one thing that I help people understand. And of course, because we're teaching the infinite banking concept or the save and spend system, I then elaborate. When I say keep it, I don't mean hoard it. I mean put it in an environment where it's going to grow in cash flow for you, right? Cup one, three, and two grow. You're guaranteed to grow in cash flow. So keep it first, and then we'll find some great ideas to do with it. So that is my thought for you, ladies and gentlemen. The dollars that come into your life, you can keep them. You just got to know where to put them.
You've got some digital courses, and you have, I think it's three levels, three different subscription models. Let's talk about your digital courses and what they are teaching people, and talk about the three different levels.
Yeah, so we've actually recently changed that. I appreciate you doing your homework, John, on that. And we have a new course library that we're unveiling right now, and it starts really with the crash course. What in the world is infinite banking? Take it at your own pace. We've given it away for free for so many people, but there's premium, freemium and premium that we have online as well to help people get to the place where they understand what's going on. Nelson Nash said it well. If you know what's going on, you'll know what to do. So we just got to help people know what's going on. Our top tier level right now, so there's no mid-tier level at this moment, is $500. And that is a masterclass, a master course. You're going to end up with group and one-on-one coaching to help people to get out of debt, to use life insurance as the main mechanism, but then borrow against it and understand how you can get into investing because that's what your goal is. Or you're like, you know what? I got to retire in a few years. So how do I use this tool if it's only going to have 5 years, 10 years to compound? Like, can I use it for this? So our courses are going to help people walk and talk through that. One of the things that we've switched to over the course of the last year and a half, quite a bit more often, is live virtual coaching. So our coaches over here in the Cash Compound, we have coaches. There's my alliteration again. We're doing a lot of online live experiences, helping people. Before we push you into, hey, here's something you have to be in or stuck in, or you might even forget about. There's nothing wrong with courses. We've got them. We want you to get into them. But we're doing live coaching sessions. And if you want a one-on-one starter coaching conversation, just to ask questions, the only thing we want from you is for you to watch our video. Watch our 60-minute video presentation first, and you've got access to one of our coaches who does what's in that video personally on a private banking level. And you've got now someone in your corner on your team to answer your question. So that's how we start. Our goal here is to get to code cracking cash flow by teaching you the basic fundamentals. And we have coaches who are doing this to help you understand that. So that's where we start, even before we get to all of our courses, because we're still revamping how they work. We've got a new platform. We got a Facebook community now called Infinite Bankers, and we'd love for anybody to join.
Amazing. And you've got an upcoming book, Cracking the Code to Cash Flow. Let's talk about that. First, what inspired you to write this book, and when is it going to be available?
Yeah, so we have got a draft we're working on right now. We've got an e-guide that's kind of a basic outline to what's going on, downloadable right now. But yeah, this is probably book one of two. We don't want to just talk about code cracking cash flow with that book manuscript. And we're working on it. I'm trying. It'll be my first book ever, so give me some time, everybody. But the second thing that we already know we're going to move on to has to do with our keynote. If you'd like to see me or my brother live on stage, we can give you and yours a presentation all across the states for Infinite Banking. But we also have this keynote about the culture. And so we're moving into helping people understand, why is it, John? Because people ask you this too, I know it. Why is it that this is so good? This idea, IBC, infinite whole life insurance, it's so old. Banks buy some, why don't I know about it? That is going to start to get covered in the book. How has the culture gotten to the place where I don't even know that this is what's going on in the financial world? And we break it down even on a cultural and color level. As you can see, those of us who are looking at each other right now, being Black in this country has a history. And that history is not about financial education. That history is not about success. It's about overcoming those trials and tribulations for success. So we're going to look at a historical view of that as well. So we're getting into that and those things in our manuscripts and our on-stage presentations as well, to help people understand what is it? Why is it that you don't know this? Why is it? Can it be broken down this simply and actually be true? What happened and how did I not know about it? And why I'm in so much dang debt when I could have been doing this? So we're getting to those things. And I can't tell you right now when those books are coming out. I'm working on it, man. I'm busy today. I'm on John's podcast, so I can't write today.
It's tough writing a book. I've got my first book coming out in about a month. I literally just got an email last night from my publicist that, congratulations, we're ready to sign off your final transcript. Just sign off and we're going to go into publishing. So I've got my book coming out in about a month. It's called Wealth Without Wall Street, Taking Back Control of Your Money in a Rigged Financial System. I know how tough it is to write. It took me 4 years to write, write this book.
Yes. Okay, good. Because I'm only at about a year and a half right now of getting my first. And then you like want to throw away everything you've written so far. And you're like, oh, no. So
Yeah, it's tough. Good. You know, congratulations to you for even taking the time, because it takes a lot of time to write a book. And people go, yeah, why do you write it? Because guys, folks who are listening, we don't make money off of books. We do it for you. Okay. We do it because we want to educate you. And I have a perfect response when people say, because you said, yeah, people ask me all the time, you know, this sounds too good to be true. How come I've never heard about this before? Why is it I'm only hearing about this now? My response is, well, first of all, I haven't met everybody. That's why everyone hasn't heard it. But the other reason why you haven't heard it is because where are you getting your financial information from? You're getting them from banks. And they're not trying to sell you life insurance. What are they trying to sell you? They're selling you product. They're selling you mutual funds.
Yeah.
You're not going to hear from the government.
The Wall Street, Bay Street, that's what they're actually selling you. And that is, you're giving up control. You're taking on all the risk and you're locking your money up with them. And they said, leave it with us. Now they're not going to leave it. They're going to do deals with it. But you should leave it alone and just let it park and sit with us. We'll take care of you in the long run. And if those are your teachers, you're exactly right. And those people have lots of money and all the commercials and the politicians in their back pocket with Wall Street. That's why you don't know, because they're the ones with commercials.
And the government's not going to tell you about it because they don't want you to learn about it because of the tax provisions inside these policies.
Right. It's tax unqualified, everybody. Unqualified. I mean, in this country, there's no tax revenue from that. Yeah, so
they don't make a
difference.
How
does that help?
Yeah. So we're going to wind it up. How can listeners find you? I know you've got your TikTok, you've got your Instagram, you've got your Facebook community now, you've got your podcast. Tell my listeners how they can follow you, because, guys, I really want you to follow Jeremiah and his brother, because they got some really great content on using the infinite banking concept. And I really think you guys are going to get a lot of information from these guys. So tell my listeners how they can follow you.
Yes, let's do it again. Run it back, ladies and gentlemen, whatever you like. YTTTIGFB. We're on all your favorite social platforms and LinkedIn. We do a little bit there. So our website is thecashcompound.com, or if you're looking for me and my brother specifically, thebankingbros.com. And I would suggest you find us on TikTok at thebankingbros and Instagram at thecashcompound. Those are some of the greatest places. From there, you'll find all the other links, right? They just all talk to each other. So that's a great place to interact with us, ask questions, and get into the DMs. We're totally here to help.
Yeah, really great information, guys. Listen, I want to thank you so much for taking your time out and explaining to my listeners how the infinite banking concept works. I know you're a very busy person, but I think this has been wonderful. And let's do it again. I know we're going to meet up very soon in June. again at the,
we'll see you
at
there.
The mastermind in Denver.
Yeah, man. Can't wait for it. Appreciate you, John. Appreciate what you're doing, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you, folks. That's all for today. If you like this episode, please subscribe, like, and share it with your friends. And that's all for the Wealth Easy Show. Take care of yourself, your wealth, and your health.